Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to another segment of the PI Window on the World. As always, I'm your host, John Hansen. Of course, who else would be here? Maybe one of these days I will get a guest host. I wonder if Letterman's free. Anyway, forget about that. I digress. Today, we have a very interesting segment in our series of interviews for the Precurious Big Ideas Summit. And of course, for those of you who may not be familiar yet, the Big Ideas Summit is taking place in Chicago, Illinois on the 28th of September. And as I said previously, they've certainly aligned an impressive array of speakers. I guess that's the way to say it. That's what I feel. And one of them is joining me today, American Blockchain Council Executive Director Jack Shaw, and we'll be with Jack in just a moment. Just a couple of points of housekeeping. Number one, if you're joining us right now, well, that's great. I'm of course glad to have you here. However, if your schedule isn't conducive to joining us at this point in time, not to worry, because the entire segment is being recorded. It'll be made available on an on-demand basis. Just one of the great things about internet radio and of course Blog Talk Radio. I also want to remind you that if you have any comments about this show or any post on the Procurement Insights blog, we have what's known as a open door perpetual hashtag, which is hashtag PI Open Talk. So that's capital PI, capital O, PEN, capital TALK. So, you know, if you just want to talk about this show or you just got a great idea or something that you want to get off your chest, that is your open line to say whatever you need to say in 140 characters or less. Now, without further delay, I want to welcome to the segment today, Jack Shaw. Jack, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm here also. I'm calling in from Atlanta, storm racked Atlanta, not as bad as Florida or southern Texas, but we've been out without power for 3 days now. So it's I'm delighted to get a break from that to talk about some topics of professional excitement.
Well, you see, I really appreciate you calling in then. So you're, and again, I don't want to digress too much, but you've been without power for 3 days. Wow. I've got four young kids, and if they couldn't get on their Xbox or TV, there would be an uprising here. But, was the storm as bad as you had expected it to be when it hit Atlanta?
It was still tropical storm force winds when it hit Atlanta. So winds in the 60 to 80 mile an hour range took down a lot of trees, took out a lot of power lines. Fortunately, nowhere near the damage or flooding that was incurred, like I said, in Florida or Texas. But 4 days later, there's still 500,000 homes without power. And I happen to be one of them, and I work out of my home office. But through the use of a series of very long extension cords, and I'm able to get enough power to get online and keep things rolling. So I'm glad that we were able to go ahead and work this out for this morning.
Well, you know, let's get right to the show because we're going to preserve or conserve as much power of that power as possible. Now, we're talking in the virtual green room. And one of the things that's interesting, before I get into the poll results, one of the things that was interesting, I said, is that everybody's heard about blockchain and all the related Bitcoin, blockchain, everything like that. Yet very few people actually comprehend. And I made reference to the procurement world. You mentioned that, you know, it's across all professions and industry sectors, but you made an interesting analogy. You said blockchain today is very similar to what the internet was 20 years ago. And I want to start off with that. You know, can you maybe elaborate on that a little bit more? Because we all know the internet and we know it like breathing. But what did you mean by that?
Well, that's an excellent point. And let me share with you a story. I've been a technology futurist for 30 years now. So in the late 90s, 20 years ago, I was speaking to various different trade associations and professional societies and organizations about emerging technologies. And of course, the particular focus in those days was the internet and the World Wide Web. And for a demonstration to illustrate to these people what this was about, I showed them something that was called a website. And I explained to them this particular website was operated by a little startup company they'd never have heard of that called themselves Amazon.com. I logged onto the website, ordered a copy of my own book, and had it shipped to the president of the association. And at the end of the demonstration, I said, "So what do you think?" And one of the guys in the hands raised his, in the audience raised his hand, and he said, "Jack, that was absolutely fascinating. But help me understand, what does that have to do with us? We're procurement executives. We don't sell books." Now, in the retrospect, we can all see, whatever field we're in, what the implications of internet technology were. And within a few short years after that time, everybody pretty much got it. But I actually did have a conversation with a Fortune 100 chief procurement officer just a couple of months ago, who shall remain mercifully unnamed, who said, "I just don't see how blockchain could possibly apply to our business." And it was an absolute echo of the fellow who 20 years earlier had said, "What has this World Wide Web thing got to do with us?" And I think that's one of the concerns and at the same time opportunities for procurement executives is to get an understanding of what does this mean from a business perspective.
Now, let's pull this. And again, I've got an interesting poll I want to touch on, but this leads into another question, because, as you know, and let's look focusing on the procurement world, we're now in the full, transition to the millennials, new people joining the workforce who are not as intimidated by technology, let's say, as the predecessor, the baby boomers. Like I, like yourself, I remember the days of CPM before DOS, and remember DOS before all of those things, and the old K-Pro, and you people out there who are young like Jack and I, you'll probably remember that as well. But the difference between back then and now, what impact will millennial involvement or integration of the profession have? Are they much more in tune? I mean, is it a technological hurdle that people have to overcome? Is it a conceptual hurdle? Like, what are the problems? And I'll go into the poll results after you answer the question. But like, what are the obstacles to that? Is it more that they just can't grasp the concept? And will the millennials help to accelerate that?
Okay, that's an excellent series of questions. So let me take a quick crack at them. Grasping the concept is the biggest challenge. In general, as millennials move into higher levels of responsibility, as they've now been, certainly for the last two or three years, we're starting to see middle and even upper middle management people out of the millennial class, if you will. They're going to grasp it a little bit more easily. But I can remember back in the 1980s thinking, well, I'm certainly glad, going to be happy when I get to be a senior executive and every senior executive understands technology like I do. I learned, of course, by the time 10 or 15 years ago that baby boomers had become senior executives, that just having time and grade doesn't necessarily give you those insights. Having said that, I think some millennials will pick it up more easily, but it has much more to do with having an open mind, being willing to think in new ways and differently about how business processes and business models work, than it has to do with any particular skill set around technical expertise. So grasping the concept, I think, is very much a key point.
So basically, that's really the key there is while there will be some, if I understand correctly, some millennial influence, in reality, the bigger question is again, thinking outside of the box or beyond the framework of the familiar is really what you're suggesting, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, now this next question, I mean, and this is a poll, November last year, took a poll during webinar and asked the question, are you familiar with blockchain's role in the business world? Not just in procurement, but this was addressed to an audience of procurement professionals. And just a little more than 5% of those polled said yes. I mean, like, so you know, that 5% seems like there's a lot of work to do. Have we made any transition or growth or progress in breaking through on that? Because I know, for example, Gartner came out with a report on the emergence of federated trusts, blockchain, and there was a government paper out of the United Kingdom that talked about, you know, how blockchain can help in terms of providing better services to the taxpayer and all of these elements. I mean, are we progressing in terms of moving beyond just that 5% number? And how long do you estimate it will take? And how long do you estimate it'll take to get some real traction, to get that flywheel effect that, you know, I refer to oftentimes in Collins's Good to Great book?
Sure. Okay. So, yes, we're making huge progress. I've seen a couple of major events take place in the last just over 90 days or so. One that was very, very important is people kept asking, when are the big software companies going to get on board with this? Now, first of all, Microsoft has been on board for well over a year. IBM has been on board for nearly 2 years. Of course, IBM is more of a technology solution enabler broad-based and not a software company per se. But of course, especially for the mid-sized to large companies, they want to know what's going on with SAP and Oracle and the other major ERP vendors. And I had the opportunity to speak at the SAP Sapphire conference in Orlando, and they announced the release of the latest version of their SAP Leonardo platform. And one of the major features was they announced support for blockchain-enabled applications across the board, not only the SAP applications, but also for partner applications developed around the SAP platform. They basically said, we are all in on blockchain. Now, of course, they didn't wave a magic wand to make all of that implemented instantly, but they made a very clear direction about where they're headed with that. IBM and Microsoft have done the same thing more recently. Oracle has jumped on board. So the big technology companies this year, and particularly over the last 90 days or so, have really gotten on board. And this is completely analogous to three other key transitions we've seen over the last 35 years. Back in the early 1980s, most business people thought that the notion of personal computers made by this Radio Shack and this funny little company with the name of Apple, were all very cute, but didn't have any place in the business world until IBM announced that they were making a personal computer, and all of a sudden, wait, these are the guys that make mainframes. I mean, they're doing it. Maybe we ought to start paying attention to it. 15 years later, mid-1990s, a lot of people thought that the internet was not useful for anything but letting college boys look at dirty pictures. And all of a sudden, Bill Gates announced that Microsoft was doing a pivot, integrating internet across its product line. 2007, a lot of people thought cell phones were a nice thing to be able to have, but weren't of any practical use in helping you manage your business or your personal affairs until Apple announced the iPhone. And I think having SAP and Oracle and IBM and Microsoft all having jumped very much on board, investing among them billions of dollars into delivering blockchain-enabled solutions, is a huge step. The second one is quite simply awareness building, and last week's issue of Fortune magazine, the cover story on Fortune magazine was Blockchain Mania, how this revolutionary technology is transforming business and why everyone from Wall Street to Walmart is betting on it, and three stories on blockchain in the September 1st issue of Fortune magazine. That kind of building of awareness between the support of the major technology vendors and then the awareness of a magazine like Fortune with the worldwide reach it's got to millions of executives is going to dramatically overcome that. The next step then is education so that people understand better what exactly is this and how does it work and what does it mean, and I expect that's what some of your other questions will be about.
Well, you know, right off the bat, and thank you for that clarification, because a number of questions came to my mind, obviously, in terms of that. Number one, the first thought was that, you know, people are looking towards the established big players to take the lead on this, if you will, because there's a certain amount of comfort in knowing that a Microsoft and organizations like that understand it. But, you know, one of the things, and it sort of segues into the next question, how will it affect the procurement professional? You know, the internet has been around for a long time, and so has e-procurement solutions, for example. And we know the history of the ERP-based solutions had a very high failure rate in terms of achieving the expected results for a sustained time within any organization. The breakthrough came is when the procurement professionals buying over the internet at home said, this is easy. Why can't we have this same experience in the workplace? Do you see where I'm going with this, Jack? And so now, if you look at it, we're at that early stage of blockchain getting the technical support and certainly the comfort support. And I'm not going to go so far as to say the old belt with suspenders, no one ever got fired for buying IBM mantra, which we're familiar with. But there is a certain amount of security when you can say, well, you know what? I mean, if Microsoft is doing it, it must be right. But the reality is that ultimately the greatest breakthroughs in our industry, the greatest technological innovations in our industry, the highest rate of user adoption occurred when procurement people could grasp the meaning and the impact of blockchain in their personal lives at home, or not blockchain, but you know, utilizing the internet and e-procurement solutions. So is that going to follow a similar path now with blockchain? And what will be that entry point?
Okay, all right, you bring up a couple of key points. First of all, in terms of applications at home, we are beginning to see that it's going to be in a number of different areas. It's going to be less around consumers purchasing stuff at home. There may be some blockchain enabling for that, but for the most part, you know, people are pretty comfortable and secure buying things online personally. But other kinds of applications are going to begin to emerge over the next 2 to 3 to 5 years. We're going to start to see made available to consumers everything from online, secure online medical records that can be shared with insurance payers and hospital and physician providers and updated by those people as appropriate while still being secure from a, you know, a HIPAA perspective and other perspectives, even online voting, land titles being moved to the internet will make the land titles being moved to the blockchain, to blockchain. There is no the blockchain, by the way, there's lots of different blockchains. But for example, Cook County is moving all of its 5 million land titles to blockchain. Now it's gonna take them a couple of years to get all that done, but what that means is that closings will take place much more quickly because title searches, instead of taking days or weeks, will be done in seconds. And as consumers begin to see that, they'll want to see the same kinds of responsiveness in their businesses. In the businesses, it is going to require a lot more cooperation and collaboration among participants in any particular business ecosystem. In this way, it's going to be very analogous, reaching back to the very early days of your career, John, when you recall EDI back in the 80s being adopted by major buyers and sellers as an enabler of improvements and communication between those people. And there had to be industry consortia and groups that would agree on what the meaning and formats of electronic data for purchase orders and invoices and ship notices and all that type of thing were for EDI. And we're going to see an analogous set of activities emerging in the implementation of blockchain. Companies will still be able to compete rigorously for them. I watch a great but they're going to agree on the underlying standards. I watched a great football game last weekend when my Atlanta Falcons held on at the end to hold off the Chicago Bears in an exciting game. They were competing very tough, but at the same time, both sides agreed 100% on what was the size and shape of the field they were playing on. And we're going to see the same thing going on in various different business ecosystems as they define how can we jointly use blockchain to take cost out of the entire ecosystem as a whole. And then we can all compete with one another to deliver value to our customers at a much higher level.
So is that where Gartner called the federated trust come into play?
Well, I've read a number of articles about Gartner, and they're very good at coining terms. And in fact, they're the ones who coined the term e-commerce nearly 30 years ago. So federated trust could be looked at from a purely technical perspective, the fact that the data itself is federated, that is located in multiple places around the internet. But it also could mean that you have multiple participants in any given business ecosystem, not only the buyers and sellers, but organizations like involved in the transactions and shipments, like third-party logistics companies, transportation carriers, customs brokers, and all of the others, not to mention regulators, auditors, and so forth, all participating and agreeing on how can we establish a set of trusted data that can serve the needs and objectives of all the various participants in that ecosystem. So I don't know if that's the way they intended it, but I think that's certainly a valid application of the term.
Now, one of the things you mentioned, it was subtle, but it is worth noting, distributed ledgers. That's generally what blockchain is, but you mentioned blockchain isn't the only one, yet it seems to be the ubiquitous one. You know, when we reach for a tissue, when we have a cold, we call it a Kleenex, even though there's all kinds of makes and brands. So is blockchain itself, because it's used as an all-encompassing reference point, I mean, is that deceptive in itself? Because really what we're talking about is are distributed ledgers. Is that not correct, Jack?
Well, I think from a technical perspective, that's correct. But I think it's important that we distinguish between the nuts and bolts of the underlying technology and how it works. Very few of the people who did, made dramatic improvements in procurement and supply chain management processes between, say, the late 90s and 5 to 8 years ago, when most of those improvements were made. They've spread out more, but they're, the last 5 years, there hasn't been a lot of new different stuff that's purely internet enabled. But for a decade or so, there was very significant improvements. Those improvements had much more to do with the rethinking of how do we use the internet and the World Wide Web as a tool to improve the procurement and supply chain management process than they did with, let's get down into the weeds of exactly how do TCP/IP and HTTP, protocols work and what do they mean and do we need to make improvements in them. There are technical people who are going to be paying attention and already are, in the case of blockchain, paying attention to very important issues around the security and the scalability and the speed and response time of blockchain-enabled applications. The opportunity for procurement executives is trust that the technical engineers are addressing the technical concerns and limitations faster than you can possibly change your business processes to take advantage of them and rethink, focus on how can we leverage the not only current but very soon emerging technologies to to make significant improvements in not only just our procurement processes, but more broadly stepping back and actually rethinking the business model as a whole. How can we add a lot of value within the ecosystem as a result of that? I'm not quite sure if I answered the question, so feel free to rephrase if I left some of that unaddressed.
Well, you know what, let's drill down a little bit further, because, I picked up on your EDI reference. And one of the things that came to my mind immediately, and it'll lead into the next question, is if I'm a procurement pro, what impact is it going to have specifically? But is it safe to say that blockchain, distributed ledgers, blockchain are going to have significant, albeit indirect impact? Like, we know EDI impacted the way in which procurement works, obviously, but it was not a direct effect necessarily felt on the front line in terms of the day-to-day responsibility. So will blockchain change the way that procurement professionals leverage today's cloud-based solutions, for example, to procure goods and services, and that all the transformation that is going to be happening will happen in the background, like an EDI? I'll use that correlation, like an EDI, where payment will happen faster, or the the efficiency in the background, the security in the background, all those things that you don't see but are an integral part of doing business, certainly in the internet world. Is it going to be, is that the effect that's going to have, or am I missing something? And is there a more direct effect?
No, your point, I think, is a very good one. Similar to EDI, implementing systems that allow you to simply participate in blockchain-based business ecosystems is not going to magically make your procurement function and supply chain management functions work better in your organization. The extreme cases, I saw companies doing EDI that would receive the EDI transactions on a personal computer, print them out, and then put them in an in-basket as if they'd come in on a fax machine. And obviously, that didn't do anything except keep key customers or key trading partners happy. And you could take the same approach to blockchain and derive very little benefit from it. The organizations that benefit significantly from it are going to be the ones who use it to rethink their processes and their business models. And there are going to be tremendous opportunities to eliminate reconciliation processes, eliminate invoices in many cases. If you've got confirmation and pricing, I mean, companies have been trying to implement receipts-based payment for 30 years now, but part of the challenge is they can't trust the combination of their data and their trading partners' data. Now you've got a much higher level of trust that's possible. Sourcing is going to be able to become faster and easier because you're going to be able to get trusted data about who these suppliers are, whether they're legit, the quality of their products and services, certifications that may be appropriate, and to the extent you're using advanced analytics or even AI analytics because it's based on more secure, reliable data, you're going to be able to make better decisions. You're going to be able to take your analysis past the A-level products down to the B and C-level products. Smart contracts are going to be able to be self-enforcing in terms of many of the provisions on timing of payments, integration of IoT and blockchain can allow much better visibility of movement of product through the supply chain and optimization of the movement of that product, reducing supply chain risk. Tracking the provenance of parts and materials all the way back even to the extractive industries was the coltan that was used to manufacture the electronic circuitry that is a component within a sub-assembly that's part of an assembly of a product you sell, mined in an area that uses run by a warlord and uses slave labor, and suddenly you've got people picketing your corporate headquarters that your company's supporting slave labor because somebody five tiers up in the supply chain is cutting corners trying to make a few extra bucks, and you haven't had any way of knowing that. With blockchain, you'd be able to trace and track all of those types of things much more efficiently. So again, it is not something that is automatically going to confer benefits on an organization, on a procurement organization, but it is something that if you leverage it effectively can help you generate a tremendous amount of benefits.
Well, Jack, thank you so much. We're running out of time very, very quickly, but one thing I guess is, with the American Blockchain Council, and you're the executive director, I guess this is one of the elements of what you're doing is or your mandates, for lack of a better word, is to really spread the word and explain blockchain as you is. I take it ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly our role in the market, in the broader ecosystem, if you will, is to help senior-level executives, especially, although not exclusively, non-technical executives like CPOs and their counterparts, understand the strategic business implications of blockchain technology so that they can begin developing plans and strategies. And we do that by conducting in-house seminars for individual companies, writing posts. I'm working on my next book, The Blockchain Transformation, How Blockchain Will Change Your Business, Your Industry, and the World. But in the meantime, I'm speaking, I'm keynoting the World Blockchain Summit in Dubai at the end of October. I'm speaking at trade association events, at professional society events like the Precurious event in Chicago. I'm excited to be there, and other procurement related activities, and helping people across industries and across business functions understand what it means from a senior level strategic viewpoint.
Jack, thank you. You know what? You're giving my producer, who's giving me hand signals, Morty, saying we're running overtime. Listen, Morty, you forgot to put cream in my coffee this morning, so, you know, deal with it. But I think this was important to hear this, Jack. And I appreciate your time this morning simply because, again, I think it paves the way to further discussion, which is one of the great things, though, at you being with the Procurious Big Ideas Summit in the speaker lineup that's on the 28th in Chicago. Because I think the more we talk about it, the more we focus on the practical integration of blockchain into how we do things and get a better understanding, I think that will forward the cause. So thank you for joining us today, Jack. I appreciate that, especially given the circumstances of extended extension cords. And I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Well, I look forward to it too. It's been my pleasure, John, and you're certainly welcome.
Thank you. And of course, to you, the listening audience, as always, I appreciate your time, and that is, of course, your most important asset. Hopefully what's happened with Jack today is you've gained a little bit more insight into the blockchain question. It'll be interesting when we do a webinar later this month, and Jack and I will be doing that on the 27th of September. I'm going to pose this same polling question and see how much that needle has moved beyond the 5%. Anyway, I want to remind everybody to check out the Precurious Big Ideas Summit that is scheduled for Chicago, the Windy City, on the 28th of September. Until then, I remain your host as always, John Hansen. Have a great day and a great rest of your week.